You can now hear How Did I Get Here while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. On-demand news, talk, and more for your mobile phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, and no memory or storage wasted. Available for your iPhone, Android phone, WebOS phones, or your BlackBerry. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store, Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
That's right. I'm back. I'm here. I'm actually back today. It's a beautiful day, and I feel like I'm back to normal. When I did this interview yesterday, I was wiped out, man. I played Thursday here, Friday in Houston, Saturday here, and then Sunday I got up early and did this interview with Kurt from the Bodines, and then I played an afternoon show, and then I played a show that night. And man, when I got up yesterday, I was wiped out. But I'm back to normal today. And anyway, I did this interview yesterday with Lauren Gergiolo from Acreville River, The Dead Left. And she also has her own band called The Dial Tones. She's a guitar player. I didn't really know her. I heard about her from Neil, and then I heard about her from Jessica, our producer. And then I asked a couple guys in my band if they knew her. And they said, yeah. And told me that she was really awesome. And then I was checking her music out and looked her up on YouTube and stuff. And turns out she's amazing. And then I found out that she's this really schooled musician that's been on this journey of like learning all this stuff and then deconstructing and reconstructing and changing direction. So she's an incredibly interesting and smart woman. And so I felt a little better after talking to her, but I did just go home after that and go to sleep and woke up today feeling a lot better. Anyway, my guest today from The Dead Left, from Acreville River, and from her own band, The Dial Tones, this is Lauren Gergiolo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Johnny?
I'm good. We were just discussing that my voice is tired. So maybe it'll sound sexy.
I was about to say there's a nice little rasp to it. Yeah.
Hey, ladies, it's me. You play a jazz master, don't you?
I do.
How many do you have? You have just one, or?
I have one. It's kind of a faux jazz master. I collected different jazz master parts and put it together.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, luckily, Acreville opened up for Wilco for a couple of weeks. And I was telling Nels Klein how this 64 Jazzmaster was my favorite guitar I ever played. And he has this gorgeous, I think it's a six, I forget what his year is. But he told me, hey, if you want to get together a relatively affordable Jazzmaster, buy old hardware, old metal, and then get a new body and a new neck. So that's what I did.
Wow! So you put it together yourself under the guidance
of a god.
Wow! Yeah. So you play. You're a guitar player, and you play with Acreville River.
Yeah.
And you play with the Dead Left.
Yes.
And you also have a band called the Dial Tones.
That is true.
And what else? Is there anything else that I'm missing?
I play with Stanley Smith, at the Elephant Room on Tuesday happy hours.
So are you a jazz cat?
I come from a jazz background.
Yeah.
But I kind of did this thing where I was really into jazz when I first started learning how to play guitar. And I studied at UT, played in like the big bands and the combos and stuff. And then I got really into country music, which kind of led to getting into like more of roots, kind of field recordings, sort of folk music.
Yeah.
And
the
then
Lomax.
Somehow that led back to rock and roll. But yeah, yeah, exactly.
Did you start in rock and roll and then veer off into jazz or what?
No, I was kind of a
Where are you from?
Jazzer primarily.
You were?
Yeah, and at first, yeah. I was more interested in it. Yeah.
What about it? Like the challenge, the...
Actually...
A freedom?
The growing up in Grapevine, Texas...
Okay, so that's where you're from.
Yeah.
Grapevine.
You can get the North Texas radio stations.
Yeah.
And so I would get all of these badass jazz programs.
Right.
And some really crazy experimental ones. You know, I forget the names of the shows or the DJs, but I would really love the crazy ones. And I'd never heard music like this before, and I was young, and I was just like, this is jazz. I love jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went to my guitar teacher. And
how old were you?
Oh, I was a sophomore.
In high school?
Yeah.
And how long had you been playing guitar?
I started when, probably a year before I started, when I was 15.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was it? What was it that you, why, did someone make you, or is it, was it a, someone made me.
Someone made you?
Yeah, I was like into acting, and my mom wanted me to be a musician, and
Your
I was
mom
13,
is awesome.
And I was like, this blows, and I don't want to have to do this, and then I went to a Cheap Trick concert, and this girl that was a little bit older than me told me that she would sleep with Robin Sander. When I asked her why, she said, there's nothing sexier than a guy that plays guitar, and I just looked her like dead in the face. I was 13, and I said, I play guitar. And like woke up the next morning, and that was just my new life.
You had a revelation.
Totally. I mean, the concert too was really moving to me, and I did walk out of there feeling feeling that concert, you know what I mean, feeling like rock and roll and like you know, the cool, you know, Cheap Trick, you know, the thing that I felt. Yeah, but this isn't about me. This
no. So I understand though. You
so
understand.
What was but yeah, yeah. So what was the thing that made you go take guitar lessons before the jazz?
I think it was like meeting kind of like a group of friends that were more like me when I was in the ninth grade. You know, I kind of like
you kind of artsy.
Yeah, yeah. I was weird. In theater class, yeah. and I was like a cheerleader and stuff, so I was
really
I was like stuck between these worlds, and I met these girls, and I was like, I like you guys.
Yeah.
And there were four of us, and you know, 6 months later we were like, let's start a band, and we totally all got instruments.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
In the movie of your life, that's gonna happen when you guys are like, you put all your hands together, and then all of a sudden you'll be in the garage jamming. So what did you guys start off doing? Writing songs or learning covers or
The full band did not last long. We did a couple of Cars songs, which was pretty
That's
damn awesome.
What songs?
Pretty awesome. I forget now.
You remember the name of your band?
It was The Sporks. Which is awesome.
Oh right? Yeah, because it's spoon fork.
Yeah, from the cafeteria. Sporks.
That is awesome.
And then it was Curious Yellow, which, by the way, is some obscure French porn. If you
that's kind of cool too. For like high school girls, like an all-girl band. That's pretty.
You're right. We should have used that. Anywho.
Anywho.
But me and the vocalist Dana Redinger, she's like one of the real reasons why I started playing guitar, because she already had a guitar.
Oh, okay.
And she knew some licks and stuff, so she totally taught me some songs.
Yeah. So you started with electric.
Started with electric.
What was your first guitar?
Oh, I forget. It's some maroon
that's
off-brand
yeah.
something or the other that I can't even remember.
Yeah. All right, so she inspired you. She had a guitar.
She had a guitar. And we...
She played. She knew some licks.
Yeah, and she... So we stuck with it. So we would write songs together, and we played, like, you know, ice cream... This ice cream parlor.
That's pretty cool.
During
like
high school.
Acoustic or electric guitar?
This thing was acoustic. Yeah. This was more of, like, an acoustic thing. And we would write songs and, you know, record, mess around with four tracks, and we got paid in ice cream for that gig. So we had, like... free ice cream our whole high school career.
That would be amazing. You know how people frame their first dollar? It'd be awesome if you had some like 15-year-old ice cream cone plastered into like a glass box or something.
Or just an ice cream dollar. Yeah, Milwaukee Joe's. Thank you.
So that was in Grapevine. So then you got into jazz and you went to your guitar teacher and you said, hey, hook me up. Teach me jazz?
Yeah, I was like, I'm into jazz. And he was like, well, here's a song called Take the A Train.
That's the first song, isn't it?
It's the first song.
That's just the first song.
Yeah.
I mean, I never got into jazz, but I got to the Take the A Train, and I got off the A Train then and went into rock.
It was one of those things where it's like, I think the reason why I got into jazz wasn't, you know, this more the playing standards. But when it was introduced to me, I really took to it. And to me, it was also, you know, a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, and I was into it. And then I just started listening to more and kind of, you know, these experimental programs that I was hearing from North Texas. Once I got into jazz, I realized that wasn't really, you know, there's like a lot of traditional forms out there. And so I started going through those.
Right.
You know? And I think I kind of came back to the more experimental stuff, you know, after.
But were you ever, like, into, I'm trying to, like, Aldi Meola or something like that?
Man, as a guitar player, I think you go through a phase where you try that stuff out, and then you're just
yeah,
like,
so
God.
Bad. I know.
Oh, yeah, I mean... I feel that way about Schofield too, you know.
It's
hard to be tasteful.
Is that fusion or is it just?
Yeah, Schofield kind of goes like I think he'll do different things. I think that there's a fusiony aspect to his playing that is.
What does fusion mean? Do you know what it means? I don't know what it means really.
It's putting rock and jazz together in a certain way. In
a
weather
certain
report.
Way that I don't like. Yeah. No, I'm just joking. No, it's true. I like how you're up, Mike. It's true. did you play in jazz band in high school or anything like that? Or
I did my senior year. I finally kind of got the courage to because I hadn't been in band at all, and so
were there some pretty badass people there? Or were you pretty good then?
I was, in my eyes, not good. I think.
Yeah, you can tell sometimes, you know, there's like a kid, a couple kids. You know Kevin Lovejoy?
I know the name.
Right. When I played with him, like we had a band, like the summer that he graduated from high school. But like, I mean, you know.
Awesome.
I walked in and heard that dude just like put his hands on it, you know, make one chord. And you can just tell like, whoa, this guy's like a shitload better than the rest of us.
Right,
know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I was just wondering, there's people like that in there that you saw that went on to play in bands that you see or anything like that?
You know, there are two guitar players in my high school that I really respected. One was a young guy, one was a guy my age. And they were both really supportive and awesome. I have a feeling the other guy is probably an engineer somewhere. Like, he just seemed that type.
He's right, right.
Whatever, probably has a family and a good salary. The other guy went to composing. He went to North Texas and got, I think, more enamored with composing than guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your home life like at that time? What was your scene? You like, were you, you know, did you live in some giant house? Were you like a rich kid or like a middle class kind of kid? Your parents get along? Were they divorced? What was happening?
It was middle class suburbia. Yeah. I felt like I was a bit more privileged than most of my friends. I had that feeling. I don't know if that's true or not, but I kind of had a feeling where maybe I had it a little bit easier than my friends. And, yeah, home life was a little bit rocky and strange, but my parents despite all their problems, are so loving and supportive, you know?
No, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. They I think everyone has that.
Right.
And so they work through their demons and at the same time have always been, like, you know, giving me guitar lessons. Like,
yeah.
I say I want a guitar, they bought me a guitar for my birthday, you know? Yeah. Just like, yeah, they've always been, so whatever.
That's good. Where are they at? Are they proud of you? Do they go to, the, like, shows when you go up there?
Oh, my God. My mom goes to every Aukerville show she can possibly go to.
Awesome.
She has these scrapbooks of, like, she's, it's, yeah.
That's a good feeling.
So I'm happy she enjoys it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so they're proud of you. So you left and you went to college. Were you a good student? You came to UT? Did you come here as for a music program or for?
No.
Were you going to be a musician or what were you going to?
At that time, I still didn't feel like that was a reasonable possibility. You know,
it's not.
Well, I feel differently now, but
no, at
that time, it was one of those things that maybe other people can do that,
right,
but not you.
Right.
You know? And so, but music was always kind of like was what I felt moved my life around, you know?
Yeah,
it was kind of the most important thing and kind of things that helped me, like, transition from situation to situation and grow. And, you know, I was an okay student. I learned to pick classes that I thought I could do well in.
Yeah.
And
did you want to move here to Austin specifically, or did you just move here because you got accepted to UT?
I'm something like a sixth generation UT grad.
Okay.
Like, my whole family,
wow,
has gone. I think one of my, like, my great great grandmother was the first medical doctor to graduate from UT.
That's fucking awesome.
So, like, there's, and I think my dad maybe.
What does your dad do?
My dad's started out as a cameraman and just went into communications and kind of in the business side of it.
Okay.
Yeah, he's worked with networks and for his
whole
life.
And so was he RTF here?
Yeah, he was okay. RTF. And he knew what was going on. He was like, he knew that UT was okay, but he knew Austin was the real education. And so I think he encouraged me.
Oh, cool.
To, like, instead of going out of state or going to a smaller school, which probably would have been better for me.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't graduate, or you did?
I did.
What year was that? What year did you move here?
97.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're young. Still, why? Is that bad?
I don't feel young.
I'm telling you, it's this business. It's going to get you. So you moved here and you took jazz guitar classes or what else were you, what were your other interests?
I like to read, so I ended up being an English major.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Do you write at all? Like a long form other than songs?
No.
Stories, short stories,
no.
Journalism.
No.
So, what were you thinking you were going to do then?
All of my creative juices go into music, basically.
That's good. What were you gonna be?
So, because of my love of books and reading, I love libraries, and so I graduated. I wanted to go into music business. And I worked at the Texas Music Office with Casey Monahan.
Yeah, he's my friend.
Yeah, Casey's crazy. And
he is crazy.
And he's married. Did you know that?
He's married?
He's married.
Yeah. What, is that weird?
I didn't know. I just found out.
Oh. I always thought he was married. I never met his wife, but...
No, he just got married.
Oh, he just got married?
Yeah. Anywho. So, and he hooked me up with a job with Davis McLarty.
Uh-huh. No, Davis.
And...
He has a booking agency.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I learned a lot there, but I also learned that I don't want to work in the music business.
No, it sucks.
And I, like, got out of there, and I was like, that's not the side of things that I want to be on at all.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't seem like you belong in that. It takes a certain kind of person to accept, like, you know, Jan Merkin or even Davis.
Yeah.
Like those guys, they have that thing where they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You seem like Wayne Nagel. You might get your feelings hurt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what yeah. I mean? I mean, I'm like that.
They're yeah, it's
true.
If you
get your feelings hurt, you can't really book shows very well.
Davis, you know? Totally had that vibe completely. Yeah. He was, yeah. And that's what I learned from him.
Yeah.
Is how to talk direct and specific and get stuff done.
Yeah.
And I started booking my own bands.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, people probably got some really good tools for that.
Mm-hmm.
So then what did you do? What was you went and you worked in these things you realized you didn't want to be work in the business, but you got to hang out with guys that I was around at a young age. Like I met Wayne when I was like 16 years old, and you learn a lot from people like that, you know. You really cool. do, you know? Like I'm sure you did. You
learned
from Wayne and Davis. So what was that? And Casey too. I mean, he sees everything.
I learned a lot from Casey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so at that point, did you have a band or anything, or did you?
Yeah, I had like probably 3 bands,
okay,
or something.
And what were you? What kind of music was it? What were you doing? Were you jazzing it, or were you?
I started a jazz quintet.
Okay.
After I graduated with Elizabeth McQueen.
Uh huh.
And that was so much fun, and we worked. We made a little money, and I it was one of those things where I just wanted to kind of keep up my chops, you know, and keep up my repertoire. So
and what like was it a bebop or was it
was no it, it was like... more old school. There was we even did some ragtime stuff, some cool. Western swing. It was vocal, you know.
Yeah,
so that's sort of stuff.
All right.
Yeah, it was fun.
And so did you guys tour around at all, or did you?
No, we would do we did an every other week gig in Houston at the Sullivans in Houston. And we'd go play Luna in San Antonio.
Right.
You know, so we'd do the kind of close stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what else were you doing then? Like, what was going on? Did you have a day job?
Well, when, as I was getting really tired of the Davis thing, I got a job at the Harry Ransom Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I was completely psyched about that because that place is amazing.
Yeah.
And I ended up working there for like 5 years, you know, kind of moving around and doing different stuff. But
what all were you doing?
The coolest stuff I got to do was be the research assistant for the New York Journal American Archive.
Uh-huh.
And it was basically in the basement, this huge basement. There was like 2 million photographs in these boxes that hadn't been cataloged. And I would go and just, like, it was searching for a needle in the haystack. I would go and look for photos for people for their books or articles or whatever they were doing. And, yeah, it's amazing. You know, anywhere from, like, the early 1900s to 1965.
Wow.
Any major event, anything going on, there was a photo of it in there.
Wow. That's really cool.
That was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a maze.
And so what was your thing when you were playing music? Then you were doing jazz, and then you said you kind of got into country. Was that, did you get into that through the Western swing you were playing, or did you just kind of start reaching for something you hadn't really gotten into yet?
I got into country a little bit earlier, like during college is when I kind of made the jazz to country move.
Uh-huh.
And really, I think it was like Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
I was like, because country music growing up, where are you from?
All around, but I lived in Texas and stuff, and it's like Garth Brooks and shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible. All you think of country, you just think of crap.
Well, I'm older than you, and when I was a kid, we would come here when I lived in Houston. I lived in Mexico and stuff. We would come up to Austin and do the Armadillo. And so I was exposed to a lot of, like, cooler.
Mm.
Like, I grew up going to see Willie Nelson,
you
know, like, once a year and stuff, you know.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I saw those guys. But I was turned off by what was happening in country all the time. Because it's just always, or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, in the mainstream, I guess, country.
Yeah.
It's uncool.
It's uncool. And so, you grow you up, back. And so you think that's country.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you hear someone like Johnny Cash, and you're like, this is country?
Yeah.
This is great. And then you're like, who's the Carter family?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
you know.
And it goes from there.
It goes from there, and you trace it back, and it's... I mean, I'm still enthralled with that music, you know? And, you know, I feel like the 20s for music were just...
What about it? What is it about it that attracts you?
Well, it's just the beginning of the commercialization of music. So it's still... You're getting the recordings. You can hear it. We can preserve it.
Right.
But it's not... It hasn't fully made that turn to being this commercial thing. It's still this thing that people did for themselves.
Yeah.
You know? So it was this in-between time where we got to really capture what was going on in people's porches, you know?
Yeah.
And it's amazing, and it has a different flavor than music that's made for making money, you know?
Right, right. So that's a really beautiful way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you, did you start any bands like that? And you, were you?
Yeah, I had an old time band called the Pistol Love Family Band.
The Pistol Love Family Band?
Uh-huh.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was that we had my college band called Pistol Love.
Uh-huh.
We were doing, you know, rock and roll, like kind of jammy stuff. It was really fun. Who Lindsey Green played in that, who plays in the Dead Left and the Daltones. That just kind of like fell apart, and we were like, we're going to start an old time band, banjos, fiddles, mandolins, and call it Pistol Love Family Band.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You're kind of probably ahead of your time at that point too, before all these, the earnest people with their fedora hats and vests, and they play their acoustic guitars high, and they're real, you know what I'm talking about? They look like newspaper guys from like the 1930s.
Yeah.
X-tree, you know?
Suspenders.
Suspenders.
We were doing this a bit before the whole Down from the Mountain, Oh Brother, We're Out There thing hit. So... It's like
we were doing it,
and then that thing hit, and then we saw like some of our friends, just like the Weary Boys.
Yeah,
you know, they really grabbed a hold of momentum. Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you do after that? Like, what was your after the Pistol Love Family Band? What was the next move?
I think so. I had the jazz band. I had the old time band.
Right? Yeah. Do you have the Daltones? Well,
the Daltones is gonna come maybe a year or two later. And it was like, so I got my jazz thing, got my old timey thing, and then this is when I kind of started to come back to get more interested in rock and roll and writing my own tunes and. To me, incorporating the kind of the things I liked from jazz and country and stuff like that into it.
And well, there's like an experimental kind of weird, almost, from what I heard from the Daltones just today on MySpace, which is older, it's a little more minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
But you can tell there's somebody that knows what they're doing musically in there. You know what I mean? It's not just like a bunch of... Hooji Mahooji, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. I really like it, though, because I like, you know, there's an innocence to it that I really liked.
Yeah.
And it's you singing, right?
Uh-huh.
So you're beautiful. You have a really pretty voice.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's very nice.
I don't consider myself a vocalist. And now in the Daltones, Carla Manzor is the main vocalist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what happens now? Do you... I don't want to jump ahead, but if we're going to talk about this Daltones... If you had a, like, is the sound completely changed at this point? Will you still play the kitchen floor?
Mm-mm. No, all of those songs are out. This is what I'm doing now is a very specific thing.
What is it?
And it's very different. It is a batch of songs inspired by Kierkegaard's Seducer's Diary.
Okay.
Which is a little bit of an obscure thing, but it's just this very dramatic, hilarious, intense, like, tale of seduction and heartbreak. And at the same time, I've loved that book forever, and I've always gone back to it, and I've written songs out of it before. And then I started getting into Charles Ives a lot.
I don't even know who that is.
He's like a... He's kind of one of the early American pioneers of kind of experimental composing. Like,
okay.
He was way before, you know, when stuff really started getting more intense in the 40s, I guess.
Okay.
You know, like, he was writing late 1800s, early 1900s, and was doing all of the stuff that people weren't going to respect until, like, 40 years later. Stacking keys, you know, he would have, you'd hear this whatever big string section going on, and then all of a sudden a little ragtime band comes into the tune, you know, kind of putting genres together.
Yeah.
So it's really American, breaking from the European, whatever classical tradition.
Yeah.
So I was listening to that stuff, and it really, for some reason, meshed with the Seducer's Diary.
Okay.
For me.
Wow.
So I was just like, I want to compose pieces around this. And so, you know, I've never been really good at writing music, but I got like a cheap music software program, and I started composing songs kind of with inspiration from those two sources.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And there's like a lot of like vocal parts going on, you know, there's three vocalists in the band now.
Mm. Yeah.
It's different.
I'm really curious to hear this. I mean, it sounds, I feel like I'm getting an education here in things I don't even know about.
Mm-hmm.
But what an interesting way to approach it.
Just sort of happened, yeah.
You're kind of like Bowie.
Yeah, how's
that? I don't know. Isn't that cool that I just said, I don't know?
It's cool that you said
what
I'm like
Bowie. What a
terrible
interviewer. Walter Cronkite would have never done that. He would have never gone, I don't know. I don't know why I said that.
Whatever.
You just made me feel like you are. So when did you join the Dead Left?
I played with Neil.
Oh, right.
A long time ago. I played bass. And then I didn't play with him for a period of years.
Can I tell you really quickly how I knew that you played bass?
Give it to me.
You hung out last weekend with my friend Corey Glazer. Corey Glazer, who plays in Sheboygan with Gray.
Oh, yeah. Corey, I totally, yeah.
Happiest guy in the world.
And I was telling Corey about the old days.
Yeah.
When I felt like we did some shows at, like, the Carousel together or something. And he didn't even remember. He was
we went to Houston. We rode together to Houston to our gig this weekend.
Uh-huh.
And he listened to the podcast and stuff, and he was asking me who I have. And I said, I have you. And he was like, oh, I just hung out with her the other day. And I was like, well, will you tell me something about her? And then he said she used to play bass in Neil's band.
There you go.
That was his good fact. But he did say you were really cool.
Sweet.
Yeah. Sorry. So you started out playing bass, and then you didn't play with him for a while.
Yeah. I didn't play with him for a while. I was dating the guitar player in the band for
I was
going to
ask
really
you,
long time.
You seem like you're so smart, it might be hard for you to have a love life like with rock dudes. Are they too dumb for you? No, I mean, that's a legitimate question. I mean, you know, you don't seem like a girl that hangs out with a bunch of dudes that talk about their wieners all the time.
Right. I hear you. I've maybe found myself in some dating situations that I got quickly out of.
Dating someone in the band, how does that end up bad? That's why you had to leave? You were dating someone in the band, you had to leave the band?
It was like a really long relationship. And so it was one of those things that when we broke up, we had all of these projects together, and we just kind of like split them up. I was like, you take those projects, I'll take these projects. And he got Neil.
That's mature.
Yeah.
And it would have been so weird to be, you know what I mean? Wouldn't that be weird?
I was so relieved to not be in that relationship anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I get that. But it would still be awkward to have to, you know what I mean? Wouldn't it? It would be weird for me.
To,
I have a lot of hang-ups.
To what? To give up a project or to
no, to have
be
to
working?
Play on stage with someone you just broke up with, and there's Neil Kasanoff just having the time of his life jamming away, and you're looking over and here's this guy and you're like, ugh, and, you know, or not ugh, but you know, maybe he's looking at some girl or maybe the girl's looking at him. You know, it just seems like it just sounds like a breeding ground for awkwardness.
Without like a period of rest, yeah. Like I'm saying, probably at least a year.
Exactly.
You know, if you
makes you crazy.
Yeah, that's so, too much. Yeah.
So you guys split up the projects, and what were the projects you were doing then?
So the family band, Pistol Love Family Band, just deteriorated, and that just wasn't there. And so I was doing, God, I don't even remember. I was doing. I really went into the Dial Tones, actually. I started doing a one-woman band show.
I saw a thing on that on Facebook, one of your pictures. What is that? You were sitting behind some drums. What was that? What were you doing?
I just had my guitar and a drum machine, and I would basically, you know, program these songs into my drum machine and be able to tweak things on the drum machine and then play my guitar and sing my songs.
That's pretty cool.
It was fun for like a year.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's a long time to do something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it got lonely, you know?
Yeah.
Then I didn't like it anymore. At first it was freeing. I didn't have to schedule with anyone else.
Right.
I just bang, did it, you know?
Yeah, you want to extend something in a song, you don't have to look at anyone, you just kind of like, you can really get into a zone that's really amazing, and then after a little while of doing it, you realize you're just all alone.
Yeah, it just starts to get a little lonely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so you abandoned the one-woman show. Mm-hmm. And when did you join Aukerville River, and how did that happen?
I joined Aukerville, like, I guess it must be almost 4 years ago now. Which seems
like
a long
time. Where are you guys
at
right now with everything? Like, what's going on with Aukerville River?
Well, we did, you know, we released an album last year and toured it pretty heavily. So now I think is another regrouping, writing time. Trying to get some new stuff together for a new album.
Well, Will primarily writes everything, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's the man. He's he is Aukerville. Yeah. He is.
And then how does the process work? He writes a song and then you guys all come in and jam it out or something? Or what?
Explain to
me how it happens.
It's worked very differently. With the last album, sometimes we didn't get his demos until like a week before we were going into the studio, and we would have no practice.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think he was trying to get a certain energy from it.
Yeah.
You know?
Who do you guys work with, producers that are cool or
Brian Beatty.
He's very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We've worked with Stuart Sullivan.
I like Stuart.
And I'm blanking on a name.
Right. And so the process is different every time with every record.
Yeah, this process for this record has already been different.
Okay.
We're doing more of a get-together, hammer out the tunes,
you guys,
together
you
sort of thing.
You tour Europe with that band? Yeah. So your tours are long, months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we go out for a month and then come home for a week or a couple of weeks and then go out again when in a touring album cycle.
It's good to be able to be in that too, because then you get a break, you know, and get to regroup and reinvent what you're doing and then go back out and do it. It's difficult when there's a constant. You guys aren't constantly on tour.
I agree. Yeah. And isn't that weird? Like, it's just like practicing. You practice hardcore for a little bit, and then for some reason the time of rest or just sleeping during the night, I swear that's when everything really absorbs into your hands and your brain, and then it makes more sense the next day, you know. It's weird.
And I think for any band, it's good to go, if you're gonna work intensely like that, it's nice to have the time when you go away from each other, because it keeps it healthy,
you know? yeah
Sure. So yeah,
this period is nice for that reason too.
Yeah. And so the Dead Left, when you rejoined Neil, was he already doing the Dead Left or was it previous to that?
He was already doing the Dead Left, so because he had just had another personnel. Well, the funny thing is that my ex, who was playing guitar in the band, moved to St. Louis.
Oh, okay. He told me about this in the podcast that I did with him.
Oh,
okay.
Really?
David
Lazaroff. He has a great band right now in St. Louis who is doing really well called the Lazaroff Brothers.
Okay.
It's him and his brother. And I played with them forever, too, like during this whole time of college. But when he left, Lindsay was like, you should have Lauren play. And Neil was like, I don't know. And I was like, I don't know. And now I'm so happy I made the choice to play with these guys because it's been like the best thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Friendship-wise and music-wise.
Good.
Yeah. For me.
I love Gray. Mm-hmm. He's very cool.
I love Gray too.
He's a great guy. We play this songwriting game. And he always pisses me off when we do it because he turns in the songs the fastest and they're almost always the best and the drums are badass on them.
Yeah.
And the singing, guitar playing, everything's great. It's like one of those things where you're like, you should keep this shit to yourself when we're playing this game.
He is such an incredibly well-rounded musician. I just think from like a raw talent level.
Yeah.
Like he just is. I mean, have you seen his visual art?
No.
Like, have you seen the Dead Left CD?
Yes.
That's him.
That's great. Yeah.
That's like kind of like the sort of visual art he does, cutting out stuff. And I mean, it's hilarious and awesome. Like,
yeah. And he's got a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
He doesn't take himself seriously or anything.
Yeah.
Not a pain in the ass.
Mm-mm.
Neil's not a pain in the ass either.
No. All the guys are great.
Yeah. Good. Well, it's nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you too.
Let's talk about some more stuff.
Okay.
So when are you gonna record the new Dial Tones album?
I am in the process of applying for a grant, and probably a couple of more grants to try to put together. I want to make the Dial Tones project with the Seducer's Diary.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to. Unveil it to the public as an installation. And so...
You're going to the NEA?
What?
The National Endowment of the Arts?
No, but I should check that out. City of Austin.
Okay.
Cultural Fund.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So I'm... This is like what I'm doing right now. Like this is what I'm going to be doing today is getting stuff together for this grant and looking for other opportunities to do like a recording / installation with this material.
When you say an installation, like what it'll reflect like the sentiment of the book and you'll be able to really, what would this installation be? Do you know yet?
I have a vague idea and I feel
you
like...
You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to.
It's still like I can talk about
secret.
I can talk about it vaguely.
Okay.
It's just basically going to support the themes of the songs through lights and space. And I want to have a different space for every song right now. So we'll see how that turns out. But
wow, that's amazing. Where do you think you would want to do that? I mean, I'm sure like, I know it's very early.
Yeah.
But I'm sure when you thought of the idea, you had a place in mind at first. They're like, oh, this would be great for it.
Right. Actually, the place I thought it would be great for is not operational anymore, which was AMP.
I don't know what that is.
It was this nice little warehouse sort of space in I think off of Annie Street in South Austin. But whatever, ownership changed or... something changed and they're not renting it out anymore like that. I was thinking Blue Theater. That place is kind of wonderful.
Place is really cool.
And that place like automatically has kind of a feeling similar to the Seducer's
like
Diary
the,
to
the
me.
The Blue Genie, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Those guys still make weird things. So my ex-wife is a photographer and I remember she had them make these things for her for a photo shoot she did.
Oh, cool.
I don't know.
Every time I've been there, there's just junk all around, you know? Like, that's why I like it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So do you live in Waco? Why does it say that on Facebook? Do you really live there?
No, I left that up as a testament to, like, why... I was at some website, and they asked me for my name and something, and somehow it didn't even tell me it was going to do this. It linked up to my Facebook without me knowing and changed the city I lived in. And I just like left it up as kind of like as a joke to myself about how I'm like, Facebook sometimes frustrates me. And just the fact that like that on the internet you can click a button and you don't really know
who's
seeing that information, where that's going, like what it's affecting.
So do you live like a low-tech life? Is that your deal? Are you not tweeting? Or
no, I don't understand that.
Somebody in Aukerville River tweets because I follow them. Someone's funny. Is that Will?
Will's a serious tweeter, man.
Yeah.
I
like him.
Tweet diddly deep. Yeah.
Tweet diddly deep. we didn't talk about when the Dead Left is playing on Thursday, right?
Yeah.
At Hotel Vegas.
Yeah.
What time do you guys play?
10.
Really?
I think. I don't know.
I like that you came on here to promote this show, and you don't even know when it is.
Pretty sure.
That's good. I bet it's at 10, or you can just find out. And I'm going to do an intro to this tomorrow, so I'll be sure to do this, and an outro.
All three bands are good, though, so it doesn't matter.
Who are the three bands? Talk to me about this.
Well, Paul Banks.
Mm-hmm. It's Thursday, April 19th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Paul is one of my favorite vocalists and songwriters right now. He's stellar, man. His range is like whatever, choir boy high.
Yeah.
And he'll rock those highs too. Like it's like darn impressive. He can get pretty low. And then these songs, they have this classic feel, like I don't know. It's hard to describe. Harry Nelson-esque a little bit.
Wow, that's like, fucking awesome.
I mean, just like these very like kind of classic feels.
Yeah.
But they're original. You can tell. You're not like, oh, he's just ripping off this song or that song. There's these soulful traditional melodies going on, but it's still his
thing.
And
who else is playing?
And Miles. And I don't know the
Miles
name.
Miles
Zuniga. I don't know the name of his band right now. Or I think Justin Sherburn. Are you familiar? He's the keyboardist for Aukerville.
Oh, no.
He's the one that kind of like said, he was like, hey, Miles and Neil should do a show together.
Right.
And so that's kind of like why this got
Is
all
he
put together.
With Miles as well?
And I would assume
that
Justin's playing in
his
band.
Miles.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Really?
And he's a great musician and a great songwriter.
Yeah.
He just put out an album last year. It's really good.
I'm not so knowledgeable about him. But I'm excited to do the show.
So it'll be fun.
And I trust Justin so much if he's involved.
That's nice. It's good to be able to trust people like that. I have a lot of friends I don't trust like that. They'll be putting together a show. I really like do a lot of research about this thing in case I was getting shoved into something I didn't want to do.
That would be the smart way to handle things.
So what's your rig like? You jazz master?
Jazz master.
Pedal board. I saw you have a pedal board in a video on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't see. It wasn't an aerial view.
Yeah.
It was from the front.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have? What do you do?
Well.
You have your nails clients. Hey, what was that? How was Wilco? Were they nice? Obviously, that guy was nice to you. Are they nice people to be around?
Yeah, they're all amazing. And really, like, I feel like they really consider their opening bands, like, they really extend hospitality to the opening bands, you know, like the more
cool.
So than any other situation that I've seen, you know, which I thought was really cool and really just kind of conscious and nice of them.
Yeah.
And they totally like watched every show.
That's so
from
cool.
Side stage. Yeah. I was like,
wow.
I just thanked Tweety. I was like, thank you for watching us.
Wow.
I love Wilco.
Yeah,
me
too.
They're one of my favorite live bands to see.
So, what is your rig? What are people going to see Thursday when they come out and see you play? Because I think a lot of musicians listen to this, and I know that when people talk about you, a lot of musicians look up to you, from what I've been able to understand so far, and they admire you. They think you're very, very, very talented.
Well, that's sweet of you to say.
Yeah.
Well, my rig.
And I'm not saying that as a backhanded compliment. Like, I don't think that. I'm just saying that I haven't seen you enough, but I'm taking the word of my friends, who I believe. go ahead. I know that I was wondering if that sounded like an asshole comment. Like, other people think you're great.
I'm going to show up and scrutinize you.
I'm going to judge you and your pedal board. Sorry.
Well,
so, Jazzmaster.
A lot of people do judge me because of my pedal board. They're like, why do you need so many pedals? Can you not play?
Yeah.
But I agree. I don't think pedals should be a crutch. I feel like pedals are an instrument into themselves, and each one you add is adding another instrument to your thing.
I just go, fuck you, man. No, I'm joking. There was a website a long time. I was in this band, Gaudi, and we all had these immense pedal boards. When we got a record deal, we got these seriously, like, you know, just the board and the power and the cables themselves were like $3,500.
Wow.
And they were huge. They were especially made by this dude, Lee Jackson, that used to live here, and he used to make these Metaltronic amps, and he worked for Ampeg for a long time. And so we did this tour with this guy, Ian Moore, and we opened for him. And I remember it was like when people's websites first started having like comments and stuff on them. And so it was real weird because you could wake up in the morning and get out on your laptop and look at people saying shit about you. And I remember one time they said we had played at Antone's, that we didn't belong on that stage, that we were a bunch of skinny drug addicts that compensated with tons of pedals and volume to compensate for our lack of talent and ability to play. So I know what you mean.
Your skinniness compensates for your lack of talent.
No, skinniness is just like, obviously this guy was not happy with his own weight, and he was pretty upset. I will say, we were skinny.
I love, you know, I feel like that's really funny. The whole, like, I don't, like, whatever, the Aukerville board has tons of people that give their opinions of.
You don't ever go up there and look at that. So you don't delve in, you don't get into fights with people on Twitter, you don't insult Billy Joel on Facebook, and you don't read horrible comments about yourself. That's good. So you're healthy.
Yeah, or good comments. I think they're both kind of.
Yeah, they're both ridiculous.
Full of BS, yeah.
So pedal board.
Pedal board. So, yeah, I have some, you know, some tweaky things, a 16th second electroharmonics digital delay.
Nice.
Works as a loop pedal, basically.
Yeah.
Really fun because you can change the speed and the pitch. And
do you do a lot of that when you're playing like a bunch of weird spaced out sounds?
It depends. With Neil, I get to. Yeah. With Neil, definitely. And like, they're doing it, too. Like, Neil has this little tweak box that he'll play with. And then Lindsay builds these things called the double deuces, which is two oscillators that makes the coolest noises, like blips and blobs. And so there's this whole noise aspect to the Dead Left.
That's awesome.
That goes on.
It ends at, like, 10 on Thursday, and I'm going to try to come down there.
Yeah, man. Who do you play with?
Myself. Nice. No. I play in, I was in a band called Liars and Saints, and I left the band, but I play in this cover band called Skyrocket.
I know Skyrocket.
I play a lot.
You play with,
Corey, who you were just with the other day.
No, what's the other guitar player?
Paul English. He was also told me about you as well, as a fan of yours. Kyle Crusham.
Kyle. Yes. Kyle's who I was looking for. I haven't seen him in a while, but he has gear, man.
Fuck yeah, he's got
that
gear.
Boy has gear.
Yeah,
he
sure does.
He has the real deal, Jazzmaster.
Yeah,
and some.
Like, I love that Jazzmaster.
Totally real deal amps. Yeah.
So I do that, and then I also do play by myself. I played last night at Hotel Vegas by myself, and yesterday at some benefit by myself.
Hotel Vegas is a good venue, right?
Yeah, it's a great venue.
I've been happy that they've whatever got the sound down and like.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't take very long either.
Mm-mm.
So that's good. So so what else am I missing here? You have tweaky pedals. You have a badass jazz master that Nils Klein helped you put together.
Yes.
And do you have any big plans for the summer?
I plan on being nocturnal and hopefully doing a lot of writing.
Do you have a recording studio at your house, or how are you going to do this record? You're going to need a grant, so you're obviously going to do it somewhere.
Yeah.
It's going to cost money.
I feel like doing the record on the cheap just sounds like I would just rather take out a loan than...
What about this Kickstarter? What do you think about
Hunt around a cheap way to make an album, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Do it right. And I've heard that Indiegogo is the way to go now.
That's a different thing.
Mm-hmm. And
what do you think of Kickstarter? What do you think of that whole movement of that? I mean, I've seen it work for people, and it's really turned out some things, like Kat Edmondson.
Mm-hmm. Dana Falconberry. Paul.
Miles
too.
Yeah.
Paul Banks, who I was talking about earlier. Right. 10,000.
Wow. Kat Edmondson asked for 50,000 and got 60. And that made me realize that I think the more you ask for, the more you get. As fucked up as that sounds in this world, the people that have asked the most money have gotten more than they asked for, and the people I know that ask for like just kind of silly amounts, like $1,500 or $2,000 or something, didn't make their quota. Like, oh, I didn't get it because, you know.
Maybe people don't think they're actually going to spend the money on what they're...
Trish, who plays with us in Skyrocket, told me once that if anyone ever needs to borrow $20, it's for drugs. Because no one really needs to borrow $20 unless it's for drugs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, so Thursday, April 19th, Miles Zuniga. And who else? What'd you say? Paul.
Paul Banks.
Paul Banks and the Carousels. And of course, The Dead Left. Featuring my guest tonight. Or today. today. Lauren Gargiulo.
Gargiulo.
Oh, see, I thought you said a V in there. And I was like, why was she saying a V when there's a G? Gargiulo.
I couldn't tell over the phone.
Gargiulo.
Or in Sicily, it was Gargiulo.
Gargiulo. And you're Italian? Do you make a good sauce? Is there any of that stuff?
I'm not real Italian. Are you super into Jersey Shore? I just got the last name.
Okay.
I would like to be.
You're not into Pauly D from Jersey Shore or anything like that?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I know. I knew that was going to happen when I said that. I was going to out myself as a guy who watches his show. I don't. I guess, did I do a bad job? No, this has been fun talking to you.
I've enjoyed this.
I just don't know how to end it.
Right.
I'm having a good time talking to you. I like you. I wish there were more people like you around.
Aw, that's sweet. Yeah.
You're smart. You're cool.
I want to hear your stuff.
No, you don't. It's going to ruin all this whole thing. Well, thank you so much, Lauren. And everyone go see The Dead Left on Thursday, April 19th at possibly 10 o'clock. Miles Zuniga, Paul Banks, The Dead Left, Hotel Vegas, and Lauren Gargiulo. Anything else?
Sounds good to me, Johnny. Thanks for interviewing me.
Well, thank you for coming over.
The street lights flicker on and off again.
All right, Lauren Gargiulo from The Dead Left, from Walkerville River, and from The Dial Tones. Man, that was good. I really did feel bad yesterday. I was just listening to myself on there. It sounded terrible. Anyway, I'm sorry I did. Don't forget, this Sunday, April 22nd at 7 p.m., I'll be playing at Hotel Vegas. I'll be doing the last show of my residency, playing solo opening for Danny Malone. And then the next week, remember, we have a live How Did I Get Here recording with Danny Malone. Sunday, April 29th, 7 p.m. at Hotel Vegas. That's 1500 East 6th Street. I guess we're going to hear a little bit more of The Dead Left now. Thanks a lot to my guest, Lauren Gargiulo, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Don't forget. And subscribe to us on iTunes.
I lift my arms up to the sky.